for our weekend panel, and we've got two guests who are both coming to us down the line remotely, but we trust them to be straight up with us today. This morning we're joined by Dr. Ella Henry, who is Associate Professor and Director of Māori Advancement at the Auckland University of Technology Business School. Kia ora, Marina, Dr. Henry.
Oh, kia ora, ngā mihi.
Can I call you Ella? Would that be all right?
Absolutely, please do. Yes. Yeah,
too formal for the weekend.
And absolutely.
Joining us from the capital, our second panel guest, it's Janae Tibshani, who is the journalist at interest.co.nz, normally based in the Parliamentary Press Gallery. I assume you're not there today, though, having a day off, Janae?
Good morning. Yeah, no, thankfully I'm not there.
I do
love Parliament, but there are limits.
Yeah, there are limits. Yes, and I think 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning, you're quite entitled to not be there. That's fine.
Yeah,
look, first of all, the groundswell protest we've just heard about, as I mentioned there, talking to Heather Carsten of King Country News, the feedback's pouring in. I mean, Dr. Henry, how do you think Aucklanders are going to feel about the protest coming to their town this morning?
Well, I listened to the interview this morning, and I think that a number of points that were raised about the concerns in the rural sector are very valid. And obviously, there is a groundswell, and I use the word purposefully, around the country of people who are feeling disenfranchised and concerned, and there's high levels of stress. I do think, though, that this sort of amalgamation of anti-groups is getting a lot more oxygen in the media than the numbers actually are at a number of these events. And to some degree, I agree with the idea that media may well be fueling the level of discontent out in the community. And that's not to blame the media, because it is good news, but it's how thoughtful are we as a nation about giving what is essentially less than 10% of the population such a grand stage.
Mm.
But that's just my view.
Yeah, sure. And Janae, in Wellington, we heard that some Extinction Rebellion people were going to perhaps lie down in front of the tractors and disrupt the protest in Wellington. We'll see if that happens. The local organiser told News Hub that they should stay home and watch replays of Country Calendar instead to better connect with the rural sector, so maybe the media could be some use there. I mean, do you think there's likely to be a bit of tension in the capital, possibly?
Oh, look, I don't know. I mean, the big protest a few weeks ago was, that attracted a lot of people and a range of people who were anti a number of things, anti-vaccine mandates, but also anti-Three Waters, I don't even know what, just, I guess, probably just generally feeling disenfranchised. So I'm not sure whether that event gave people an opportunity to vent around all the things that they're upset about. And, you know, that's valid. People are allowed to express how they feel. And, you know, we've been through a period of immense change. There's lots of things, lots of moving parts, and I guess it's scary and it's unsettling. But I'm not sure whether there's still that sort of oxygen, or whether there's that energy, or whether that event kind of gave people a big outlet to basically just to get it out there. It's also not a very nice day in Wellington. I don't know if the weather affects these sorts of things, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, it is. I had a layer of skin taken off, I think, cycling here in the morning. Yeah, typically bracing spring winds here in Wellington, I can indeed confirm that. But while people were coming to the towns and cities today for the mother of all protests, Ella, Auckland is getting closer to the freedom to leave the city. Lots of reports in the media about a frenzy of travel and tourism bookings, people desperate to get out, I guess a bit of a stampede possibly closer to Christmas, but real fears, of course, about it being a bit too soon to travel into under-vaccinated regions. I mean, do you sense, that people really do want to get out as soon as they can and there will be a bit of a stampede?
Well, I certainly agree that in the community, in the small community that I interact with, you know, we are all looking forward to getting out of Auckland. We are all looking forward to getting out of our houses. I mean, we've only had a week and a half where we've been able to go into a shop. And I know that sounds ludicrous when you compare it to some of the problems around the world. But there was a really buoyant feeling out and about amongst Auckland. So when I went out shopping last week, retail therapy is actually good for the soul. That's a little bit of science for you. But I do think that I get the sense we feel that we've borne it very hard in the last 3 months, and to be able to go and visit whānau and have holidays with friends and family around the country is something we desperately looking forward to. And given that we are quite a sizable chunk of the overall population, I think it's a good thing. It will stimulate the economy so long as we are doing it safely, double vaccine, testing before we leave, taking precautions. I don't want to visit my friends and family outside of Auckland and take any risk whatsoever of endangering their lives. And I think that's the attitude we have to take.
Fair enough, too. And Janae, I don't know about you, but from a distance, it's, we obviously have sympathy for people through the north who've had all these restrictions for so long. But one thing that's alarmed, I think, my household is all the references to Christmas. You know, let's get this moving by Christmas. And of course, the government giving assurances that Aucklanders will be able to travel by that deadline of Christmas and the emotional sort of energy behind that. Does that worry you at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's politics, isn't it? And for a government to keep people locked down in Christmas and prevent them from seeing their loved ones would just be politically such a tough decision and tough move to have made. So I can see why they've done that. And it's almost given everyone something to look forward to. We're just counting down to Christmas. It's meant to be a happy time. We want to be able to spend it with our friends and family. I mean, the flip side of that is that, you know, COVID-19 is going to spread throughout the country, and that's going to spread into communities where people are unvaccinated. It's going to be an unhappy Christmas, I think, for a lot of people. And there's rightly probably a certain degree of nervousness around that. But I think Ella is right that people do need to take responsibility and actually, think about, before we travel, think about who we're visiting and whether they're vulnerable and are we vaccinated or have we been tested? Hopefully we've all been vaccinated by then. I definitely will be thinking about who I'm visiting over that time and where I've been and just being a bit mindful of that.
Well, another issue that gets people going, Morning Report on Friday here on RNZ National had a lead story on Friday about the $1 billion value put on Lost Sun and views as a result of nationwide housing intensification law changes. That had the feedback fairly pouring in to Morning Report.
Phil Pennington with that report. Feedback already coming in on this. Do keep it coming to 2101 on the text. This says, disappointed in the headline framing of lost value to homeowners. We have been pandering to existing homeowners for far too long. Time for real action on the housing crisis. So strong views on this issue. 2101 on the text. 13 minutes past 7.
Now, it's not 13 past 7, it's coming about 10 to 9 almost, so don't panic. But look, the feedback that came in on the other side of that was complaining about the green light for slum dwellings. Obviously, a lot of emotional reaction to the thought of intensive housing. I mean, Ella, in Auckland in particular, seems no consensus at all about this issue. But again, are we hearing, as you talked about earlier with COVID, you know, perhaps the loudest, crankiest, most intransigent voices on this?
Well, I mean, I do think that there is an absolute need to increase housing. We have not enough houses in New Zealand. We have, you know, too many people for the dwellings and significant numbers coming back to New Zealand under COVID. So intensification is one of the strategies. Greenfields, communities being built out in rural areas is another strategy. I would hate to be the government trying to figure out where the emphasis lies. The reality is in every major city in the world, sunlight is one of the perks of the wealthy. Let's be very clear, whether you're in New York or London or Paris or, you know, Bombay, sunlight is a privilege of the wealthy. How we build and intensify housing and still ensure quality of life and social cohesion, those are the kinds of challenges that are going to face future governments. You know, and we will need more intense housing. So how do you do that and balance it with green spaces that allow that community that's losing its sunlight to have increased community space and increased community facilities and infrastructure? Because I think you can do intensive housing and you can still enhance quality of life, but it requires planning.
Well, later on this morning, we're going to be talking about those bogus labels that get used to pit generations against each other, the boomers, Gen X, Y, Z, etc. So, Janae, forgive me if I'm oversimplifying. I think you're about probably a generation back from myself and probably Ella as well. This is a complicated issue, isn't it? We've even seen Green politicians, current and former, disagreeing about this housing intensification. I mean, is this an issue where you think even within groups you'd think would be in favour of getting as much housing as possible for younger generations and conquering that affordability issue. There just isn't agreement.
Yeah, I mean, these issues are so divisive, and it's difficult to look past the generational divide because there is a generational divide, quite frankly. But there is also, a divide between wealth. So there are a lot of younger people with wealthy families who are buying properties, and there are older people who don't have that wealth who can't. So I think it is, I've actually, in the way I think about these things, I do think it is a wealth thing, not even an income inequality matter. It's a wealth inequality matter, not necessary. I think that is a bigger thing than the generational divide. But it is it's complex, and I think that this issue with the sunlight, it's a classic one that'll wind people up. It's just, as a journo, you know that sort of story is just going to get people going. But I think that the people who did this report into the value of the sunlight said that the loss of sunlight would be worth $1 billion. And I just thought it was good to contextualise that $1 billion because the value of the country's land and housing stock is $1.5 trillion. So $1 billion loss of value, $1.5 trillion value of land and housing, and that value has been increasing, and in the past year it's increased by about 30%. So, you know, very hard to have lots of sympathy for that argument. And I mean, also loss of sunlight needs to be weighed up against the issue of lack of housing. And also the fact that the existing housing stock isn't exactly great quality. So I think it's good to look at both sides of it. Although, you know, of course, sunlight is very important, and surely we should be able to densify and have some sun. But $1 billion, sorry, not huge in the bigger scheme of things.
Yeah, as if to illustrate exactly what you're saying there, a text in 1 minute ago, we need more badly designed and built slums, don't we? Now, the thing of this intensive housing, people just immediately seem to assume that it's going to be poor quality, and that word slum just keeps coming up. But Phil Pennington copped a bit for his reporting on this. There was another element where he said the policy doesn't seem thought through. There was actually nowhere for demolition waste to go. Now, if you're perhaps a newer generation, Janae, you just want more affordable housing, you'd be thinking, look, that's just details where the waste goes, just get it done. But look, if the policy and the downstream effects haven't been thought through, that's fair, isn't it, to highlight?
Yeah, and actually, I this policy did take me by surprise, and the fact that it's going through Parliament so quickly as well, you know, it just amazes me that for years we've sat on our hands and not done much. And I guess Auckland does have the unitary plan, and that is actually allowing for more densification in areas that are close to transport routes. I think that's really good. And the number of consents has shot up. That's fantastic. In other parts of the country, like Wellington, it's a different story. But the speed at which this is happening does concern me. And I do think that, you know, we should still value good design. We don't need to turn the country, you know, turn parts into slums. I don't think that'll ever happen, but design is still important. It's about striking a balance. I know that's a really boring take, but yeah.
Well, let's do something else that's potentially boring, because it's so financial. The release of data on Friday relating to the consolidated accounts of the nation, Reserve Bank showing that two-year-out inflation expectations ran at 2.97%, a 13-year high for the survey. I'm dumb. I don't know what that means. Janae, can you help me? Is this significant?
Oh, that's not boring.
I just don't understand
it. Very interesting
piece
of data. Look, I guess since COVID-19, governments and central banks around the world have loosened monetary conditions. They've been spending lots of money, cutting interest rates, doing some figurative money printing. And all of that has caused inflation, and that was part of the goal of cutting those interest rates was to boost inflation. So now this inflation is a little bit higher, and people are expecting it to keep going up. But the big question is whether it'll pass or whether it'll linger, and that's because a lot of the inflation is also coming from supply chain disruptions, which means it's more expensive to ship things around the world. Oil prices are higher. So now we're in a situation where we have inflation after a very long time finally rearing its head, and that's why the Reserve Bank is faced with this issue of needing to get on top of that inflation. The way it does that is by increasing interest rates. But the difficulty of it doing that is that the economy is still in flux. There's still lots of uncertainty in Auckland, particularly businesses are still closed. And, you know, it'll be mindful of increasing interest rates to get on top of inflation, but not dampening the economy, and also not putting people in strife. All those people who have taken out massive mortgages in the past couple of years, there's a mountain of household debt. And so those interest rate hikes are really going to affect those people and bite. And the Reserve Bank will be conscious that if people feel that they're paying more for their mortgages each month, they'll spend less in the economy, and that might hamper the recovery. So quite a lot of moving parts there. It's quite interesting, actually.
Well, Ella, do you think that during lockdown time, such as you've experienced in Auckland, lasting so long, people have been actually looking at their personal finances, their personal situation, an awful lot more closely, and perhaps making, you know, quite big decisions about their future because, you know, the feeling that it's all a bit acute right now?
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And I think it's made people very introspective. There's nothing quite like war, famine and pestilence, you know, the horses of the apocalypse, to galvanize people's thinking about their mortality and their security and what is really important in life. And for far too many New Zealanders, having safe and secure housing, watching that disappear over the horizon has become one of, I think, the greatest concerns after the pandemic. So to watch house prices rise so rapidly, to see them move out of the potential possibility for so many people in this country, and now to see that those who have made it onto the property ladder, not the big wealthy investors, but those younger generations getting in there may well be threatened by a rise in interest rates, is, I think, just exacerbating the tension. So I'm not an economist by any means, but I know that boom and bust cycles are a natural part of a capitalist society. And we have been facing a boom in many ways in this country, and there may well be some of the manifestations of bust on the horizon, which would just add to those, as I said, you know, the horses of the apocalypse of plague and pestilence. And I just think we're in for a time when we need to knuckle down and be as conservative and as caring as possible just to survive the onslaught.
Well, we'll finish up on the panel this weekend with another economic-flavoured story. Our Trade Minister, Damien O'Connor, met his Aussie counterpart on a trip across the ditch, part of a bigger trip for Damien O'Connor, in a rare overseas one in these COVID times. So apparently, if we were to judge by this very short press conference, there are no really significant issues in trade between New Zealand and Australia.
Okay, we'll now take some calls from our friends in New Zealand. So if you would just want to tell us who you are, and then you can ask your question. All right, I'll assume that there are no questions from New Zealand.
That's great.
Thank you.
And that was that, all done and dusted in under 30 seconds. No questions about New Zealand-Australia trade. Apparently, though, according to TVNZ's Andrew McFarlane, that was because the New Zealand media were given about 15 minutes notice and they weren't very happy about it. But just briefly, Janae, does that mean no big issues between New Zealand and Australia?
I think definitely not. I wasn't on that call, but I don't think I've ever been in a press conference where that's happened, ever. Usually someone can think of something to ask, surely. Even in 15 minutes notice is, you know, we've had much less than that on a frequent basis. So anyway, bit of a laugh, I suppose.
And Ella, have you ever been met with stony silence like that? Questions, anyone? Not one? Oh dear. And how does that make you feel?
I'm a teacher in a university. This is part of my daily job, saying to my students, any questions? And being met with steady silence. But I do think that this is a very, very odd situation to be asking a whole country, are there any issues? No, of course not. You're our friends. The fact that we own 3/4 of your country means nothing whatsoever. I think that might have had something to do with the stony silence.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a cabinet minister's dream, you'd think, wouldn't it, to have a press conference with absolutely no questions. If I was Damien O'Connor, I think I'd have a pre-prepared statement rolled out that you think could then appear in the media with the absence of questions. Thanks so much for joining us both today, Dr. Ella Henry, and from interest.co.nz, Janae Tibrashani. Thanks so much for your time on what ought to be a day off for you.